Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. This is the week the Prime Minister and his team hope to reset his premiership. Tomorrow, Boris Johnson will give a speech in which he will revisit his election agenda, this time shaping it in the wake of coronavirus. But before we get there, are we heading to a local lockdown? James, rumours abound and there are conversations taking place that Leicester could be the first place in the UK to have a local lockdown since the national lockdown was eased, if not fully lifted. What's the likelihood and what will it involve?
I think the likelihood is quite high. They've sent in these mobile testing units into Leicester and they are finding a worryingly large number of coronavirus cases. And I think that given that the whole government strategy is to replace the kind of sledgehammer of a national lockdown done with more with kind of a scalpel-like local interventions, it would be surprising if they did not do that in Leicester, especially given Leicester's proximity to Birmingham, one of the largest cities in the country. And I think it will be a big test, Leicester, as to whether local lockdowns can work in a country where people move regularly around from one place to another. There will be people who live in Leicester but work somewhere else and vice versa. And so I think it'd be fascinating to see how this works and whether it can succeed in preventing the infections from this uptick in the virus from spreading out of Leicester and getting into the rest of the Midlands.
Fraser, do you think a local lockdown will show that the government has a strategy? Because ultimately, the reason Number 10 is looking to talk about other things this week, which we shall get onto shortly, is there is a sense they now have things fairly under control when it comes to coronavirus. So is this a type of decisive action which will make you have faith?
It's certainly an improvement from national lockdown, which is a kind of like a chemotherapy, if you like. It might kill the virus, but it'll kill lots of other things as well, including the prospects of children's education, sense domestic. I mean, the list of what lockdown does is large. So you could argue that the government has finally worked out that rather than the second lockdown, we've been hearing a lot about this, if our number goes up, we'll have to lock down again, that right around the world, no country is locking down again. Every country is going for local restrictions, whether it's a school in South Korea, whether it's a meat processing factory in Germany. Locking down a whole town is a bit excessive. I mean, you could argue you could lock down or certainly just ask people to stay at home in a certain vicinity. This is what the Germans did. Of course, I guess the government is experimenting right now. And the other thing is, you might think, as James was saying there, how could you possibly be sure they would respect this? Maybe they're going to be nipping off to Birmingham anyway in the car. But there's now plenty of, not a Matt Hancock app, but there is plenty of Google tracking data where Google has actually turned out to be strikingly good at telling us how often people are asking for directions, how often the phones are showing people moving from one place to another. So if it were to lock down, you could tell pretty quickly if people were respecting that lockdown. And one of the big surprises over the last few months is just how obedient people are when asked to lock down by the government, or even if they're told that the virus is back in Leicester and the government doesn't recommend locking down, people might stay at home anyway.
James, Chris Whitty has said he would be delighted if coronavirus had left this country or was not such a big factor by next March. Right now we have a lot of the financial packages to ease lockdown still in place. But just on the issue of local lockdowns, I mean, if Leicester has to lock down or, you know, doesn't open things at the same pace as the rest of the country, perhaps it isn't so painful right now for businesses because they still are getting some support. But what happens, I say, perhaps in winter when the furlough scheme is technically run down, we are out of the business grant period? Do you think businesses are going to look for specific support from the government when they have to have local lockdowns? And is that something the Treasury is going to be happy to give?
Well, I think it all depends how long these local lockdowns are. And as Fraser said, how big an area they cover. But I think the basic principle that if a government tells a business that it has to close for no fault of the business's own, then that business is entitled to help and compensation. You know, for example, if you run a restaurant in a place that is then put into local lockdown, and so suddenly you're having to close your doors despite the fact that you've made your restaurant COVID secure, you know, you've been compliant with all the health and safety regulations, then I think you have a strong case for the government giving you compensation. And I think this is going to be a challenge, because there's obviously going to be a long tail of these local lockdowns and how you work out the specific targeted support schemes. I mean, I think we have seen, for example, with the support that was offered to businesses in Salisbury after the poisoning there, that, you know, there are some models for how you deal with how you support a specific local area through an outbreak. I also think what is interesting about Leicester is we had Western Superman, we had a kind of essentially a local lockdown, but that was trying to stop an infection in the hospital getting into the community. In Leicester, it appears that the infections are in the community, and particularly in the food processing plant, and it's trying to stop them getting out from there into the rest of the community. So it's a slightly different kind of lockdown. I suspect quite a lot of these local lockdowns will be about essentially cordoning off care homes or hospitals from the communities that they would normally interact with. So, which means that the problem you so rightly identified, Katie, should not be so acute in those places.
It's worth saying just how often these things do die down. And it's funny, you might think, okay, it's come up again, it's got an R value of like, you know, 3.2, and that means three people are going to get it for every person infected. But you do not see this exponential curve. Everywhere there have been mini outbreaks, from like China through to America, they have been containable in places that have already seen the virus. So I think what Britain is doing is just watching around the world, learning. And I think that in 3 months' time, we'll probably have learned to do an even smaller lockdown or take even more precise scalpel action to this. So it's, you know, this is bad news for Leicester that it's come back, but it's encouraging for the rest of the country that we are not looking so far at a second wave. We're just looking at small little repeats of the virus, which can be handled in a discreet way.
Now, James, tomorrow we'll be hearing from the Prime Minister. He'll be delivering a speech in one of those, well, supposedly now called the Blue Wall seats. But today we've had a beginning of what is going to be a series of announcements which are aimed to show the government is focused on delivering on its election promises. So today it's funding of £1 billion for 50 major school building projects in England, promised by the Prime Minister. Is this the government getting back to its level up agenda?
It is the government getting back to its levelling up agenda. I think this announcement on schools, though, doesn't fill me with confidence, because I don't think the biggest problem with education in England is the quality of school building. You know, there are obviously some schools that are in need of repair work, and that is important. But I think one of the mistakes that Ed Balls made as Education Secretary was the idea that what English education really needed was better school building. What we really need is better teaching. And I think that is my worry about this, is that it's the idea that levelling up is going to be building new, better looking schools, which is all well and good, but I don't think that is going to solve the problem of educational inequality in this country.
It fits a rather worrying theme, actually, that you help these places by borrowing shedloads of money and spending in them. If that were the case, they probably would have stuck with the Labour Party in the first place. I'm actually struck by how little the COVID agenda seems to have changed the government's plan here. What the places, for example, one of the things that we've just seen, a massive levelling down effect, will be educational closure. That will mean for 13 weeks, children in the most deprived areas of Britain will have had the worst education. We've seen this quite clearly, how the private schools have given pretty good homeschooling, the good state schools are given good homeschooling, and the ropey schools, which tend to serve the poorest areas in Britain, a very pernicious coupling, have given a very bad education. What is going to be done for these people? It's very, very easy to write a big cheque and to build a new gleaming building. Some of the most deprived areas of Glasgow are full of gleaming buildings that have been put there by successive well-intentioned governments. It's the lives of the people inside that is the problem, and it's the education given to people in the poorer parts of Britain over the last 13 months, so the weeks, that needs the remedy.
Now, on schools, James, we've also heard today that when it comes to the government's plan to get all pupils back to school in September, both primary and high school. Parents in England who do not send their children back in September will face fines. We've seen in repeated polls that there is a scepticism, there's caution, and generally there's just concern amongst a large group of parents about sending their children back to school. Do you think the threat of a financial penalty will fix that?
I think some, for parents who have kind of deep-seated worries about health, they probably will be prepared to kind of risk the fines. I personally think that the lockdown in schools has gone on too long already, and it is doing lasting damage to these children's education. And I mean, you've got to get kids back in schools. The virus takes a toll, but the toll of children not learning is also a significant toll that's going to have kind of lifelong scarring impacts, I fear. And I think if you carried on with a situation where attendance at school was voluntary, you would have lots of children missing, like, you know, a whole calendar year's worth of schooling. And that is very worrying. And that could lead to some really deep-seated social problems. I also think there's an issue that if kids aren't going to school, that means that often problems that would be picked up by teachers are being missed, and that obviously creates risk and vulnerabilities. So I think it is right that the return to school in September is for all pupils and is compulsory.
Now, finally, I'm not just bringing this up because I myself have delayed a wedding, but we heard about the great relaxing of lockdown, which is taking place from Saturday. And I think one of the themes is pubs are reopening, restaurants are reopening. One thing was, for example, weddings of up to 30 being able to go ahead. But every time the exact guidance comes forward on how to make places COVID secure or make these things safe, it does seem as though a lot of the joy is being taken out of leisure pursuits and others. So we've learnt today that if you want to get married in July, A, there's a problem with councils, but two, you wouldn't actually be able to have your father hold your hand as you walk down the aisle. And also the 30 people you're allowed is specifically for the ceremony. You're not actually allowed to have a reception that has to go down to two households. Fraser, do you think there's a problem in the sense, not just focusing on weddings, just when people hear things are being relaxed, and then the reality when they go to find them? Because also in restaurants, we're expecting perspex screens.
I think the government can get out of this by saying that it's all just advice, that there's not going to be a law which is going to demand that a bride like you, Katie, doesn't hold her father's arm going down the aisle. Or you might get photographed by one of the guests and shamed on social media or something, I don't know. Of course, when you lift restrictions like these, you're going to get a halfway house will always seem ridiculous. For example, why is a hairdresser allowed to reopen but a tattoo parlor not allowed to reopen, when typically the tattoo parlors have got far greater standards of hygiene than hairdressers? But if you were to get married and hold your father's arm walking down the aisle, I very much doubt you would get busted by one of the guests who would report you for non-compliant behaviour. I think if the government simply issues guidelines and asks people to use their common sense, then that is the most logical way out of a situation. But there are a great many people still caught on the cusp between what the government regards as sensible and what is verboten. And it's pretty difficult to look for logic, really, in any of this. But if you're going to get something as draconian as lockdown, you're going to get a great many things which are prohibited, which don't stand to reason.
One thing I hope is eased soon is the ban on communal singing. Because, I mean, I'm not a particularly religious person, but I do think that coming together to sing hymns is an important part of kind of what binds people together. It's one of the great joys of life. I mean, it'd be a real pity if kind of hymn singing is kind of banned for months to come until everyone is confident this virus has gone. I do think though, Katie, I read your piece in the Sunday Times about weddings and why you are glad that you're not doing yours with the 30 guest rule and the guest 31 problem. And I think this is true. I think a lot of things people will delay. And I think this is one of the big questions is, you know, do people choose to put off doing things until they can have a more traditional, more normal experience? You know, it's not just weddings, it's universities. I think the universities will find lots of people thinking, actually, I'm not going to start university this September. I'd rather wait until it was back to more of a traditional university experience before I do that. And I think one of the big challenges for the economy is going to be, do people put off activity thinking, well, I'll wait until things get a bit more normal, because obviously if that is the case, that is going to cause big problems.
When churches do come back, perhaps the first song they can sing is that song, the hymn you had at your wedding, James, that Quaker hymn, "Dear Lord and Father of Mankind, Forgive Our Foolish Ways." Because after the last few months, we've seen all too many foolish ways to forgive.
Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.